You're listening to KSUA Radio 91.5 FM Fairbanks. My name is Kevin.
And my name is Dylan. We are back for another episode of Speaking of Anthropology here on KSUA 91.5 FM Fairbanks for the 25th of February 2022. It gets smoother every time I say that now. And how are you doing today, Kevin?
2022. That's still for me a great note. An interesting note, an exciting time to be alive, and happy and joyful, of course, as always. Now things are doing great, Dylan, here in Fairbanks, Alaska. Everything's great. Snow fell, but it's getting cleaned up. The temperature is warming up. We're looking at like 20 degrees or so on the daily now, Dylan. And no, it's good. It's good. It's nice to kind of get warm temperature after this long stint of cold, negative 20s, 30s. It almost feels like, I think, you know, I had a roommate of mine yesterday. She went skiing midday, kind of a midday lunch ski out. And it was funny. She said to me, and the statement didn't click in my head till just now, but she said somebody had ran past her and said, "Oh, an afternoon spring ski, and is it or in it, or as the British people say?" Yeah, I was like, "Wow, okay, no, you're right. It is an afternoon ski time, you know."
Yeah, well, I mean, it is. You know, it is the end of February. We're coming into March. My spring break is only 2 weeks away now. So yeah, you know, it's it's looming, although, yeah, I mean, the weather here has been all over the board. It was just sleeting earlier today, so that's cool. Not really a fan of a place where that's just a thing that happens in wintertime the way it does here in New York and presumably in the mid-Atlantic, you know, this upper part of the East Coast, but I guess that is what it is. It was like 60 on Wednesday. Like, it was nice and warm, and you know, it was like fine, and then yesterday it dropped down you know, into the 30s, and then today it's 35 and it was sleeting, although it's tapered off now. But yeah, it's winter weather here is very different, but I'm very curious to see how that goes for us going in the spring here on the East Coast, for sure. And I know, I'm sure y'all in Alaska, y'all back home, are excited about going through all the false springs that lie between now and the, you know, the true thaw yet to come.
The true fall, the true winter, the true spring. Yeah. it's always nice to kind of get a chance to look into the weather and realize, I don't know, like leaving the house every day. This is another thing that I think we can talk a little bit about too today. On Speaking of Anthropology, is like weather and preparing for weather, especially with my field of my current work, right, Dylan? I've been doing quite a bit of innovation, technology design, and kind of thinking about how we can pitch ideas, right? And, you know, a lot of people pitch ideas to me these days. They're like, "Kevin, you work for Alaska Center Ice, so you definitely have some interesting ideas, I'm sure, and have some interesting thoughts that maybe you can fund our project, right?" And so this is one, Dylan, recently that I saw and or heard from somebody, and they said, "Why hasn't somebody created a mirror, right? Like, when you walk out of the house first thing in the morning, right, there's a mirror, but on the mirror, it like will read your clothing and tell you if you're underdressed or overdressed, in terms of like preparing for weather." And I was like, you know, that's an interesting thought. I've never thought of, like, usually when I leave the house, growing up at least, I always overdressed, because you can always take off layers, right? If you're underdressed, then you're just cold, right? And this is growing up in the San Francisco Bay Area, where it's literally consistently 60 degrees Monday through Sunday, you know, well, I mean, except for in the night times, but it's just the same. So there's nothing to dress for. But then in Alaska, you know, today was 20 something degrees, right? A week ago it was like negative five. And so that fluctuation itself, I think maybe this technology could be interesting and useful, but yeah, this guy had me thinking a little bit about the ways in which we dress and prepare. And then I think we've talked about it too, Alaskan fashion versus New York fashion. That in itself is a different conversation, right? Will extra tufts ever make it onto the runway, Dylan? That's my question.
I mean, I don't know, but I was wearing my pair around today, going through all the slush in the water. Yeah, I mean, on that topic, though, I think I'm trying to remember which company was experimenting with it. It was either like Facebook or Amazon, maybe. But, you know, one of them was working at one point on a smart mirror that would like give you fashion recommendations and stuff. And, you know, just like general sort of advice, like what to wear, you know, like this is what's trendy and in season and stylish, you know. But yeah, I mean, I guess applying that to the more practical endeavor of telling you, you know, oh, hey, you might want to put on another layer, or actually, you know, it's warmed up a bit. You don't need to dress up so much. That would be an interesting application. That would also be a very Alaskan move to do, as you said, right? To take something that maybe is necessarily meant for is a very different purpose. It would be used for different purposes, you know, here in New York or in the Bay Area or LA or wherever, you know, and turn that in just am I ready for the elements, for, you know, being comfortable in these you know, severe winter time temperatures. Yeah, that would be I think an interesting application. I don't know, you know, maybe it's not too far off in the future with, you know, the plethora of smart technology that we have today, you know, maybe it's in our Alaska's, near future.
Yeah. I think there are many, many futures to understand and explore. Yeah. And I think this is something that I keep revisiting, Dylan, and it's, you know, anthropology in itself is a field. And again, these are recent conversations that I have, you know, when people have thoughts about psychology and culture and wisdom and behavior, they're like, Kevin, you're the anthropologist. Tell us more about it. And, you know, I humbly say, you know, there is research out there that you can definitely read up on. And I would love to help you do that. And, you know, being that resident anthropologist is the same as for any field, right? You're the resident chemist, biologist, engineer, right? You know, these questions. But I think, you know, the simplicity and the being, of course, being humble as an anthropologist is half the battle, and figuring out that, you know, you can't do everything, and but you can try. And that's what's fun about it, I think. Yeah, I think today's show, Dylan, you and I will just be chatting a little bit about what's going on, a relaxing Friday afternoon here in Fairbanks, Alaska on KSUA 91.5 FM Fairbanks. We're going to play some music as well and just keep your Friday morning / afternoon in New York, a evening going, and onwards and upwards, right, Dylan?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just taking it easy here in another Friday. I think we're going to start off with some Snooty Fox here on KSUA 91.5 FM Fairbanks.
You're listening to KSUA Radio 91.5 FM Fairbanks. We're here in the studio talking about life, and speaking of anthropology, is always playing some good music. A collection of music that I will say, Dylan, that comes from a variety of places, I think, and you know, in from different people, and that's what makes our playlist so special, I think, because it's music from our guests, from ourselves, from what we're listening to now, which is kind of interesting. It creates kind of like an archival experience. That's something that I've also been having a conversation with some of my peers recently, is, you know, some people like to create new playlists for a new period in their lives and then be able to revisit it, right? Which is an interesting thought. Like, you know, we've talked about how music triggers memories as well. And so maybe like that is part of it. And so for us, it's a whole collection of that, right? It's music that people are listening to in the archaeological fields, what songs they're listening to on loop because, you know, they have no connection. They're off the grid working at a field site. Or the sort of music that it's just literally walking into the radio station here today that I was listening to or what Dylan has been listening to. So, yeah. In terms of catching up today, we also wanted to thank all of our listeners for the continual tuning in and chatting with us. You know, we should always update you guys on what's going on. And so here we are today. Dylan. Dylan's been doing a master's program at Columbia. And busy time, right? I mean, it's spring, which means midterms. I don't know, have midterms come and gone yet, but they are here. And, you know, your classes are going well. I hope, Dylan, you're passing them or acing them. Sorry, I don't.
I hope I am. The thing with the master's program is I don't, at least one in anthropology at Columbia, and I had caveats because, you know, every discipline is different, and also Columbia is, you know, it is a very specific institution with its own sorts of traditions and approach to academia and some other differences with a lot of other anthro programs in the U.S. But at any rate, all that to say, do not have midterms, do not miss midterms. And so, yeah, I mean, my classes, I think, are progressing nicely enough right now. I mean, mostly, you know, it's just staying on top of weekly readings and, you know, participating in class, doing occasionally. I've already had one, you know, class where I had to, you know, lead it for that day, you know, just kind of that usual, the usual fare for a run-of-the-mill, you know, day-to-day stuff in a anthro program like this.
Yeah, day-to-day, you know, writing papers, reading articles, considering and then pulling from your the archives of your brains, the deep dark yes. corners where you know, you read a single quote and you're gonna cite that, right?
I'm thinking a fair amount about archives this semester, especially because one of the classes I'm in is historical anthropology, right? So, you know, that obviously has developed in different ways over time, and different anthropologists have had different approaches to that. But, you know, one of the early ones, right, was drawing on, you know, histories and archival materials and stuff that had already been written to sort of provide a historical background or, you know, sort of an explanation, although that depends on a case-by-case basis, but at least a historical background to a specific institution, maybe a custom, or even just trying to provide the historical context to a society, right? Something like Geertz's Islam Observed, right, which is drawing on both colonial and immediate post-colonial histories in Morocco and in Indonesia to sort of compare, you know, the Islam and its development and post-colonial sort of role and situation in each of those two societies, right, and sort of, you know, analyzing how it developed over the centuries to that culminated in the specific scenarios that each of those two countries was facing in the 60s. You know, that's kind of one example of a recent reading that we've done and discussed, you know, and just looking at that sort of stuff and both, you know, what that tells you, but also like keeping in mind, like, you know, especially with a lot of 20th century, early and middle 20th century works in this sort of subdomain of anthropology, you know, understanding that people are relying on colonial histories and stuff, and, you know, those are not necessarily what we would consider objective or necessarily as comprehensive sources as one might like, right? You know, being both products of these you know, exploitative, voracious institutions that are interested in cataloging and understanding a territory to control it and extract resources from it, as well as, you know, just the fact that people are, they were, and, you know, do remain, but they were colored by the biases of their times and sort of those particular outlooks. So yeah, you know, the topic of the archive, even though I'm not taking in the archive specific classes per se, but definitely seeing some intersections this semester, especially in that historical anthropology class. So yeah, thinking about that one for sure. Although I'm curious, Kevin, as to why it's maybe at the been at the forefront of your mind a little bit, if it's purely out of the conversations that you were referencing earlier on music, or if you've been thinking about some other stuff too.
Yeah, no. So recently, actually, Dylan, this could be kind of an interesting conversation, I think. I like how you use the word forefront as well. You know, not to say that, you know, you're working on history and whereas I'm kind of working on like the current pioneering technology stuff, which is opposite ends of the spectrum of time frames, right? Which is interesting. I mean, we're you know, Dylan, you're looking at the archives, the last week, actually, the Fairbanks North Star Borough had a Alaska's Economic Summit, and so they hosted this summit to discuss what they call CEDs, which is overall like evaluations of economic development right here in the Fairbanks North Star Borough District. It's definitely, it was an interesting conversation for two straight days of discussing kind of like what are the different segments of Alaska that we should be looking at and helping develop, right, economically speaking. And you look at some of the topics that there was in this two-day summit, right? We're talking about agriculture, communication, healthcare. We talked about innovation and research. We talked about small business and entrepreneurship. We talked about education in the workforce, right? These are all really like important topics, I think, to think about. And for the first time in a long time, I think I kind of had a retrospective view on society again. I think when we focus so much on, in anthropology, we think a lot about kind of the details of the behaviors, the political, you know, interactions that people have, the cultural interactions that they're having. But to pull it back and look at like society at large and look at these, like, you know, based on categories, it was interesting because in each of these sessions, we discuss kind of what are the implications of these topics, right, on people. And, you know, they've come up with a draft of an example of what economic issues we're facing and what issues that we are, and strategies and actions that can be taken, right? And they break down the metrics of it as well. And then they essentially were like, critique it. You know, I think as a trained anthropologist and political scientist, it was a field day for me. Like, I was having fun. You know, it's what I was trained to do for the last 4 years in my degree, is kind of look at a topic and break it down, see what are the issues that we are facing and how can we reevaluate, right? And then from my current work at Center ICE, Alaska Center ICE, here based at the engineering building on campus, you know, Center ICE is the Innovation, Commercialization, and Entrepreneurship, which for a long while I thought was just, you know, design thinking, but I'm just starting to realize the community implications of it, right? You know, how can you take an example, Dylan, right? A thought on, you know, let's say agriculture, somebody's trying to do a hydroponics project, right? So how do you do it? How do you actually get a project going? And I think it starts with, maybe it's collaborating with a student. Maybe it's collaborating with a scientist or researcher. Maybe it's collaborating with some you know, agricultural specialists, talking to politicians about what the needs are. And then, of course, tapping into, you know, important connections with, you know, ecological knowledge, traditional ecological knowledge. So people who've been doing hydroponics, right? So connecting all these dots is difficult. But that's, I think, where an anthropologist can come in and kind of like say, you know, these are the conversations we need to have. And how do we have them? Of course, right? Through maybe an interview, maybe it's through a radio show, maybe it's through informal conversation. But then how do we break down these topics where we can connect somebody to somebody else? I think living in Alaska, and Dylan, you can probably attest to this as well. Maybe living in New York, it's different, but there's something about Alaska. I think being able to meet somebody who knows somebody who can help you get that done, you know, it's 2 degrees of separation where you can have something concretely done here in Alaska. And it's been really, really empowering and moving in many ways to see that. So that's my brief little recent forefront of my mind of like, you know, what are the issues that our society is facing, right? Yeah, that's a big question that I think, you know, people from all levels of life are thinking about. But specifically, what are issues that we can connect the dots to really get the ball rolling, right? I think we often forget that we're all very, very capable beings and we all are have big aspirations. But how to actually, you know, step forward on those, I think that's something challenging. So anyways, Dylan, that's my 2 cents on what's on the forefront of my mind. And I know you have archives in your mind, which I love. It's just shows the 2 different spectrums of what anthropologists' careers can go down.
Well, if you might permit me to try and meld them here, because I do have something else to offer from another one of my classes this semester, right? So another one of the classes I'm taking is a linguistic anthropological graduate level course, Language in Its Limits. And what we had to read for this week, what I helped lead the discussion on this week, was a book that I think probably a lot of anthropologists, especially a lot of linguistic anthropologists who work in the circumpolar north and especially in North America, are going to be familiar with, which is Barbara Meek's We Are Our Language: An Ethnography of Language Revitalization in a Northern Athabascan Community. And now she was working with Kaska speakers in the Watson Lake area of the Southern Yukon Territory, right? About, I want to say, not exactly, but pretty close to the same latitude as Skagway, right? So, you know, for listeners in Fairbanks, from my still Fairbanks oriented perspective, I thought it was, you know, somewhat farther to the south than I was initially expecting. And then when I said that to my professor, she said, when I looked it up, I thought it was very far north. And I was like, yeah, you know, that's fair. But at any rate, so one of the things that Meek talks about in that book though, is, you know, she spends part of the first chapter discussing, you know, sort of the historical process that unfolded in the Yukon Territory of colonialism and how that affected the Kaska language, right? And you know, indigenous languages there broadly, notably with, you know, the boarding schools and stuff, but then also just with the economic developments in the region when the Alcan went through, right? You know, in the early 40s and then was opened up to civilians in the late 40s, right? And then when, you know, with the development of modern mining in the Yukon Territory and stuff. But something that she emphasizes in the book is that while all those developments had an effect on the language, right, and on the people, right, and you know, a lot of people suffered, especially from the boarding school policies and stuff, that those things weren't what was shaping the present struggles of language revitalization. And she was doing this work, the book was published in 2010, you know, so probably, you know, the mid 2000s, right, maybe early 2000s, somewhere in there. But she you know, she emphasizes that the struggles that language revitalization is dealing with, you know, in the community, in, you know, the Watson Lake area and among Kaska speakers, is due to you know, the present day circumstances and present day policies and conditions, whether that is, you know, certain traditions within the community or, you know, funding aspects from the Yukon territorial government and stuff, right? The schooling is for the indigenous languages isn't necessarily or at least at the time, it certainly didn't seem to be the most robustly funded, right? She points out to funding disparities between indigenous languages versus something like French, you know. So you have that, you have, you know, curriculum concerns, but she makes the point that all these things, you know, there is definitely a legacy of the past colonialist assimilationist policies that the Canadian government produced, you know, the Canadian government enacted that, you know, produced a lot of quite severe negative repercussions that hurt a lot of people, you know, and had quite an effect on the communities. But that, you know, regardless of it's modern day policies that are, you know, creating the present day contemporary problems or that are shaping those contemporary problems. And so, you know, her approach is very much like a recognition of historical wrongdoings, you know, and of a, you know, certain historical legacies, but with the emphasis on the fact that it's not just trying to undo something that is stopped, right? But that, you know, no matter what, the present situation of, you know, in this case, the Kaska language is being shaped by present day circumstances as well, right? And particulars that are, you know, specific to what is happening now and that don't necessarily have direct roots in, you know, what preceded before or can't be solved by, you know, just solutions to what came before as well, right? And so I think that's a very, you know, also I saw, again, considering I'm taking that class in historical anthropology, I thought that was an interesting mix of, you know, like being cognizant of these sorts of historical legacies and historical implications for things while also being oriented, as many anthropologists are, in the present, like you were saying, right? And concerned with how do we, you know, help people revitalize their language? How do we help people, you know, develop economically and stuff and, you know, be able to have access, you know, to be able to engage in a lot of things that they were formerly, you know, restricted from. And so dealing as well with just not just, you know, what came before, but also with what are the present circumstances, what's unique about the present moment and what unique new problems are being posed to analyze and to, you know, for the anthropologist to analyze and, you know, for the community to deal with. And if the community deems it appropriate, maybe for the anthropologist to help with, of course, that gets into, you know, another topic that we have touched on in the past, right, about, you know, activist anthropology, right? And that, you know, certainly has its place, but, you know, maybe a discussion for another day.
Yeah, the language revitalization itself is also, yeah, big topic. I think there's just so many avenues and facets of research, though. You know, I think this is a common experience when researchers are going through their work is you start to get lost in the weeds of, you know, wow, I have this, I need to understand this. When I say this, I mean, like, you know, an example, language revitalization, you need, you know, how many people do you need to talk to? What sort of languages are, you know, what sort of linguistic terms you need to know and how can we bring it back? You know, what education programs and systems can we implement them in, right? These are questions that are immediately coming to mind. And then from a business side, I guess, like, you know, funding and how much, you know, time and effort needs to be spent on these things. These are all part of it. So it's always interesting, I think, as anthropologists to examine kind of the variety of work that's being done out there. And then I think to have the guts to reach out to somebody. and I think, you know, I was talking again to my peers yesterday about, you know, journalistic endeavors, right? Journalists, you know, spend a great deal of time, you know, like calling people. They spend essentially, we made up a stat last night, and this might be true or might be false, you know, 95% of the time calling people and trying to get sources and information. And then the last 5% is writing the actual article. And anthropology folks do that quite often. And having the guts to then maybe collaborate, like, you know, Dylan and I, to have the guts to collaborate on a show and to do it and to talk about these issues that we are personally experiencing as anthropologists, the field itself is facing, and so on and so forth, right? And so I think that's what makes this experience and study sometimes very, very interesting. On a quick note, there is a quick announcement we like to make, that the Alaska Anthropological Association is hosting a conference coming up soon next week, February 28th to March 5th. And if you're interested, please check out more information on that. Again, that's the Alaska Anthropological Association's 49th annual meeting. So hashtag AKAA. It'll be virtual this year, February 28th to March 4th, with a topic on the effects of climate change as an overarching theme of this year's conference. So check out more information on that. Again, Alaska Anthropological Association is hosting a conference, which, you know, we definitely hopefully will be involved with and get a chance to chat more about it. But as we wrap up the show here today, Dylan, I want to give you just a few more minutes to speak to our listeners and to me as well about what's next for today and for the rest of the spring.
Today, I mean, you know, that's a good question. I've got a new reading for my language and its limits class, maybe, you know, breeze through that a little bit. But yeah, for the rest of spring, I mean, I only have 2 weeks until spring break, you know. And so then after that, right, we're kind of on the downhill slope of the semester. So yeah, you know, just trying to figure out scheduling for things and stuff. Maybe ideally, you know, maybe start thinking about final paper topics, you know, and just piecing together what that last part of the semester is going to look like. And then, you know, what my summer is going to look like, you know, which is, I mean, I know technically we still have a few days left in February, but really, I mean, you know, once this whole roller coaster starts, it just keeps going. And before any of us know it, you know, it'll be May, and then I'll be like, all right, time to get cracking. So yeah, got a lot of things to figure out for sure.
This reminds me of that, for those local here in Fairbanks, the Birch Hill skiing area, and that the roller coaster. It's just every uphill, there's a downhill. For every uphill, there's a downhill. But for every last uphill, there's this big downhill. So we're going to get there soon enough. So thanks so much, Dylan. And thanks for tuning in to Speaking of Anthropology. We're on all platforms now, so check us out. I believe we are on, Dylan.
We are on Spotify as well as Apple Podcasts. Those are the two that I manage. I believe that you have added us to the Google side of things on that one. So yeah, we are basically, you know, where you get your podcasts. We have the RSS feed. So if you're one of those people who uses a podcast app like Overcast, is also available through that. So check us out anywhere that you listen to your podcasts.
That's right. And you're listening to Speaking of Anthropology. My name is Kevin.
My name is Dylan.
Have a great day. Thank you.